Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you, my friend, want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives that are available on the Podbean app. If you follow us on the Podbean app, we have every single show ever released on that platform. You'll also get all of your favorite shows like Fresh Air, WTF with Marc Maron, ID10T, The Michelle Obama Podcast. All podcasts available there, and you can also access over 1,000 How Did I Get Here episodes. So, download the Podbean app from your app store and start listening today. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Merry Christmas. This show is dropping on Christmas Eve. I hope you are all somewhere that you really want to be. Be that with family, with loved ones, with friends, with your loved one, with your significant other, or even if you want to be alone. As long as that's what you want to do, I hope that's where you are right now. Spending the holiday the way that you want. That's right, baby. 2021 is almost at an end. It's been a crazy year. I'm actually doing this on Tuesday before Christmas. So I'm doing this intro on Tuesday before Christmas. So I'll be in Houston with family. I hope you got your Christmas shopping done at least by now. Hopefully I've gotten mine done by now, because as of Tuesday, when I'm doing this intro, I've only gotten one present. I need to get it together. That's part of my thing on Wednesday. I've been looking for a car. I told you guys about that, but it's been really hard, man. There was a car I really liked, and I was supposed to go see it today at 11. I'd made an appointment to go do a test drive because you got to make appointments. So I made an appointment to go do that, and they texted me at 9:30 saying like, "Hey, sorry, man, your car sold." That's a drag, because I went and saw two other cars I didn't really like that much. So anyway, the car search goes on. Hopefully I'll find one. Hopefully I'll get all my Christmas shopping done before I go to Houston for Christmas. And hopefully you've got your Christmas stuff done, right? It's a crazy time of year, man. If you are alone, if you find yourself alone, if you find yourself feeling alone, maybe if you're alone at Christmas and that's not where you want to be, reach out to someone. Do what you can, man. This is a tough time of year for a lot of people, and I just want you to know that there are people out there that care, and there are people out there that are there to help. So reach out. Reach out. Reach out. Do what you can. All right? Gang, I have a great show for you today. You know, since 1978, Esther's Follies has been bringing modern-day vaudeville theater to Austin, Texas, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. Right here in Austin, Texas. I'm sure you've been by there and seen, you know, at least walk by there on Dirty Six, and all of a sudden you see these people like performing in a window and you're like, what the hell is going on in there? Usually there's a guy dressed like whatever the president is at the time. Usually. And they've had a crazy year. You know, they had to be closed a lot of the year, and they went ahead and did like started a YouTube channel and did a bunch of really great stuff. But what I wanted to tell you is today I've got Sean Branigan and Ted Meredith from Esther's Follies on the show. Both of them have combined 38 years at Esther's Follies. You can find Esther's Follies at estersfollies.com. We have a great conversation about the history of Esther's Follies. There's actually a great book by my dear friend Jesse Sublett. I've not read this book. I've read three of Jesse's books, and he's been on the show like three times to talk about them, but not this Esther's Follies. But Jesse's a great author. You can find this book at estersfollies.com. You can find out more about estersfollies.com if you don't know what it is that I'm talking about. It is a modern-day vaudeville theater located in downtown Austin, right here on 6th Street, historic 6th Street, in our entertainment district. They have shows every Thursday at 8 p.m., and Friday and Saturday they have shows at 8 and 10 p.m. Go to estersfollies.com for all of your Esther's Follies need. And listen, gang, go support Esther's Follies. Go out there, see a show. I know the Omicron is coming up, and I know that I've had all these people on here promoting things, and I've been promoting things, and it's time to be safe. I hope that this holiday season you keep safe, healthy, and insane. But also, check out Esther's Follies. Go to estersfollies.com and listen, have a really Merry Christmas. Very Merry Christmas. Have a holly jolly Christmas. Have the best Christmas you've ever had. And enjoy my conversation with Sean Branigan and Ted Meredith from Esther's Follies. Let's get down.
In the sound booth, can you hear me?
It's nice to have funny people. There's That's no fine. Sound booth.
Yeah.
Now, normally I don't. I mean, some musicians are funny.
Many musicians are funny.
Many musicians are funny, but you get the whole, like, you know what I mean.
The tortured artist?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's more about the perception. We're also very tortured artists.
Yeah, we torture one another.
Yeah,
they got the TAS, the tortured artist syndrome. There you go.
Or as my girlfriend in college called the young sensitive asshole. Young sensitive asshole. A ton of those in college. Everybody very fraught.
How are you guys doing? Is it good to be back?
Yeah, man. It's been a blast. It's been a little, hinky. We started back in June, back when we thought, you get a vaccine and then you're done. You're good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they started doing breakthrough cases. The numbers in Texas went up and had to scale back a little during September. But now we're around in the corner, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah, we started when we brought back the show. The first number was this great big celebratory. COVID's behind us. Throw away your masks. Let's all, get together. And then within a month, we were sort of rewriting it. COVID's still kind of here. Maybe we should be a little more careful.
Just hedge our bets a little bit.
Yeah, essentially because we're hosting a super spreader event five times a week.
Right. There's something horrible about feeling like it. And I'm in this band Skyrocket, and we had these shows that we had booked in April or March, and then the tickets went on sale at the beginning of June.
Yeah,
for an August show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so we had sold out shows that were like 50% attended, but it's pretty fucked up when you go out there and start like trying to get people to start coming out again, and it all shuts down. Yeah. It's almost twice as bad.
Not only that, but the people that do show up to those sorts of events are probably not the one your top choice for people to come, because they're probably the ones being the most lax about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Following things as it is.
Yeah. I'll say that, we did shows over those first couple of weekends of August that were like Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas, and or Houston, San Antonio, and Austin. Mm-hmm. And San Antonio was pretty full, but Houston was there was no, it was just like a normal night.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone just packed down each other inside, breathing in each other's faces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun time for live performance, that's for sure.
Yeah. So it's getting back to normal now. You got people going and you're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things seem to be going pretty well, pretty smoothly. Everybody in the cast is vaccinated. We've all got our boosters and stuff. And we can't force people to wear masks, but we encourage it. And then we roast you really bad if you're not vaccinated, because we make a lot of jokes at their expense.
Yeah, true.
Right away.
Yeah, we wind up with maybe about a third of the audience wearing their masks through the show.
Time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody seems to want to wear them in the lobby, which is cool. We encourage that. But then we spend the next 2 hours literally spitting on the audience on the front three rows.
That's the weirdest thing about this whole thing is the shows that we did do at 310, it was you had to wear your mask to come in.
Right.
Then once you're in, that's the part where it gets bad.
I wear my mask and play. Like when I go into the gym, I'll wear my mask all on the way in the door, and then I get to my thing and take it off. And it's performative. But
it is
I think it's an important performance to do, to demonstrate.
Right.
But yeah.
Right,
I'll take the hit. I'll wear the mask even when it's not.
It's fine because I'm religious about my mask at the grocery store.
Sure.
That's the one place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
And I always go at odd. I use our acting hours so that I can go when nobody else is there, but I'm still wearing it even if I'm the only one in the aisle or whatever.
Sean, did you write that HEB, the song?
Oh,
the
I think so. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
yes, HEB people like that. We got a big basket of food on opening night from them. So
oh, really? That's awesome.
I think that's why.
Yeah. Do we know each other?
I don't know. Do we?
Do I look familiar to you? Because you look really familiar to me.
Have you been to Astor's Follies?
I have. It's funny because I've only been... I mean, I've lived here consistently since 1991, and I've been once. I'm sorry. I've never seen the bats.
Okay. Hey, I never saw it until I was in it, so I really can't.
We may have run into one another. It's a small town.
Yeah.
I don't get out much other than Astor's. Like, okay. I'm not really
right, that does
get
take
about
up our weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
So I used to spend a lot of time at the Velveeta Room.
Oh, okay.
Oh, then,
since the 90s.
Sure.
Outside. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it was just outside during a smoke break or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to smoke. I just quit smoking. I was watching you smoke. I had my first smoking dream last night.
Oh. Did you wake up wanting a cigarette really badly?
No, I woke up like, wow, that was intense, man. Yeah. It was intense. Like, I was like, fuck it, and I'm smoking.
What is a smoking dream? Is it like, I imagine it's black and white and it's in French? And-
Yeah, exactly. No, it was pretty colorful. And I was like, I was just like in this zone where I was like, I was lighting it. Someone was like, Johnny. And I was like, fuck you. Like, it was like this, fuck. Like, I said, fuck you.
So more of a punk rock feel.
Yeah, yeah, that's how I felt. Yeah. Do you, losing Trump as like a person to...
I mean, have we lost him?
No, we haven't lost him.
But yeah, no, that was a consistent...
But is he the focal point of all this stuff anymore?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure if you ask him.
Thankful. Yeah, he'll tell you different. But yeah, no, we barely reference him in the show right now. I mean, well, he comes up anytime we do really political stuff. He tends to warrant a mention. But we've shifted over to Biden now pretty full. Mm-hmm.
Who's Biden?
I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we finally came up with my solo for Biden was the thing is, Trump is so easy to parody.
Almost too easy.
He falls into the realm of self-parody, and we've consciously made an effort not to include Trump in the show simply because I don't want to throw any more oxygen at that asshole.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
if
yeah,
we can if we yeah. can sort of purge him from the zeitgeist, that'd be one on us.
Yeah.
But since Biden is less interesting, the angle we came at it from was Biden doing close-up magic to explain the problem. One thing all Americans love is close-up magic. So, you know. And, of course, all the tricks go wrong, and he's terrible at it. But when you have to sort of find an angle to come at somebody like that sideways.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
Biden by himself is not terribly funny. He's just sort of a typical, you know, your typical right. politician.
But it infuses that sort of dad energy. That I think Uncle Joe.
Yeah, right, right. He's just trying so hard. Yeah. He just wants to be liked so badly.
And he's literally failing at that.
Yes. Yeah. No, I try and I have the foam ball. We can make COVID disappear and open my hand and 100 balls come out. You know, son of a bitch, the Delta variant. We got science working on it. We fine.
How is it you guys Sean, you've been there. How long have you been there?
23 glorious years.
So 98.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Where did you come from before that?
I was raised back east in Boston, and then I moved to Seattle after college and spent a couple of years there, and then moved here, and I got involved with a sketch comedy group that worked out of the Velveeta Room, and then everybody there was invited to audition for Astor's. So I auditioned for Astor's, and then within a year, I was making enough money to quit my kitchen job, and so I've been making my living as an
actor. Awesome. Where were you kitchen jobbing it?
At Mezzaluna.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Mezzaluna?
Of course I do.
Yeah,
there were some fancy dinners. Those were like record. That was a record company place in the 90s. Like with that. That's when they came to town to take you to a fancy place.
Sometimes when he's dancing a little too hard on stage, you can still smell that like burnt olive oil and garlic smell that comes from having worked in a kitchen.
No, that's just the olive oil you use on your eggs. Garlic olive oil.
Yeah.
Ted and I live together.
You do?
Yes.
Yeah.
How's that go?
Super,
live together,
super
you work
sexual.
Together. Well, that's
highly
good.
Erotic.
It was kind of perfect time because we moved in just a little bit before the pandemic started, and so then we were on lockdown. And we were producing video content for the show.
Right.
And it was like, couldn't have been quarantined with a better guy.
Oh, shucks.
It kept us busy, you know, like we were just cranking out. Anytime we had like some dumb idea, unlike usually at Astor's, there's kind of a process and it takes a while. We might work on something for a couple of weeks and then decide not to do it. There was no time for that during that time. We would like film something, slap it together, you know, both basically learned how to edit film.
Yeah.
And
you had a little theme song,
Daily Dose of Masters. Yeah. And yeah, last night I was a little drunk and sort of looking through the stuff. We produced a couple of pretty good videos. It was kind of a crash course in guerrilla filmmaking. We did some okay and fun stuff. And it's remarkable now that we all have, you know, these amazing cameras in our pockets and can edit on the fly on our phones. And
yeah, yeah. The Trump, not to go back to the Trump, but the Trump office parody is really fucking good. It's really brilliant.
Yeah, that was one of our last ones.
No one ever thought of doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Michael Scott is very much a Trump-style character.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jared is definitely Dwight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched that one. That one in the Trump Christmas Carol, I thought, was particularly
that was our epic
effective.
Piece.
Yeah, the three-parter.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Outside of acting in there, you also do props, Sean?
Yes. Yeah, I make most of the props at Esther's, and I like to make puppets.
You're right. We have this in common. I'm friends with the guys in Fragile Rock.
Oh, there we go. Sure. Yeah, I built them. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I built them. And Fragile Rock's on its way back.
Are they good?
Side note. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. I was like, I wonder what happened. I tried to produce them, and I went to like a rehearsal, and I think I freaked them all out.
That's hard to do because they're pretty freaky already.
No, I think I came at it like I'm a musician, right? So they're fundamentally, there's like a weird chasm where I'm like, this stuff's got to get a little bit better.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we're not going to spend our time like learning how to fucking play drums and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. It's performance. And then when I heard the record, I realized how off the mark I came at that. I actually texted Brentley and told him like, I'm sorry, man.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, good on you.
Because I got my feelings hurt because I felt like I really understood them as, I mean, you guys, obviously you connect with it.
It started out as kind of a novelty act and then morphed into something a little more serious. The people who do it all take it very seriously, which is great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the commitment is really where it's at with that.
And we roll deep because there's like seven puppeteers and three musicians. Like it's a big crew.
Oh, wait, were you in the band?
I would sub in for Brentley once in a while, but probably not.
He was there when I was at the rehearsal. Okay. All right. So what exactly do you guys run Esther's Follies? Do you guys in charge
No one runs Esther's Follies. No, the owners, Michael and Shannon, have that distinction.
Running,
and they've been there since the beginning.
Since the beginning. 1978 is when it opened.
Yeah.
And it was where Flamingo Cantina is? At first,
I don't remember exactly.
No, it was at Liberty Lunch first. They owned Liberty Lunch. So they did it at Liberty Lunch.
Right.
And then they were on Sixth Street, like where Maggie Mays was or someplace like that. And then that burned down. Then they were in the Ritz. And then they spent this last 25, 28 years or something where they are now at Sixth and Red River.
Right.
All my memories of them are from being on that corner.
Yeah, they've been there a good long time.
I had a weekly residency at Steamboat on Sixth Street. I don't know if you remember that place up the street from you guys. From like 1993 to like 1997 or something like that, or 96 or something. Wow. But I used to go by and you'd see the shows all the time. And
Through the window. That's our best advertising.
I know.
Yeah.
I remember when I first moved to Austin, I walked past there and I thought it was a drag show.
I always thought it was like a burlesque show.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's a burlesque thing.
Yeah.
What are they doing there?
Is it because the window makes it extra exhibitionist feeling? Is that, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe because it's song and dance because, you know.
Yeah, and you only have so many references for
that.
Is it weird? Like, do you guys get like young people in there?
Oh, sure.
Going there from the street?
I mean, a lot of times what happens is people who went in college bring their kids when they start at UT. So you get this weird, like, generational thing. And then any given night, I mean, you know, Thursdays are the night, like, where we get a bus full of, like, people from Sun City up in Williamson County. So, you know, the average age is the same as the average room temperature on those nights. And then
it's a good line.
And then other nights, it's like people in their 20s, 30s. Yeah, it's all over the map.
The late shows will be like the young shows. Like the 8 o'clock is for mom and pop, and the 10 o'clock show is for the kids.
Right.
Do they remember how they? What was the show called on Friday nights at Velveeta Room?
There've been so many.
It was a dirty show. It started at 10.
Oh, I don't know.
It was just like you could be as dirty as you wanted of show. Is that does it?
They kind of do that. The Velveeta room anyway.
Like Blue Velveeta sent the.
I don't know.
Am I making that?
We don't adapt the show between 8 and 10.
There's no change.
Not really. Sometimes at the 10 o'clock, we'll include things that we couldn't include in the 8 because of time. Okay. If we're running a long show. But the content doesn't change.
We just hit the curse words a little
for
harder.
A hot minute, for about a month, we used to do a midnight show on Saturdays.
Oh, yeah.
Where we would hang around and we would just invite the audience to stay. And we were like, if you want, and we did all the sketches that were too dirty or too weird to do in the regular show. Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. But yeah, it also made that, for
Skinny dip.
That's right. But it made for three shows on Saturday, which was a bit much.
Yeah. But that was back in the Noelle Wells days when she was in the cast.
Yeah.
It was one of our former cast members who went to UT RTF major and was at Esther's Follies and then went on to SNL.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is Master of None.
I was going to ask about that. Like, people.
She's probably our most famous.
There have been a lot of graduates.
How many big and famous? No. Noelle's about as close as we got to getting big and famous.
Yeah.
She was funny.
Yeah.
On Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. She was great.
Yeah, it was unfortunate she only got the year, but she went on to do, I think, much bigger and better things.
Yeah.
She was in Master of None. She self-produced Mr. Roosevelt.
I'm trying to get all this stuff. My friend Jesse Sublett wrote a book.
Oh, Jesse,
about you guys.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Love Jesse.
Yeah,
great
he's
guy.
Been on the show a few times too.
Yeah.
Also a couple people that are in your cast. Tamika Soretti.
Mm-hmm.
She's still in there?
Not right now because she's too busy.
Oh, she's big and famous.
Stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even count her as former. She was with us briefly, and now she's just getting work hand over fist.
I went to your website and I looked at it, and
we're all kind of hoping maybe she'll come back and slum it with us for a little while.
Yeah, but now she's on like the Wonder Years, and
that's right. Okay.
She's blowing up. She's doing real good.
She was on the show last year. She's really nice.
Yeah,
really
she's
interesting
cool as
person
hell.
Too. Yeah. Becky Jo, I've been on her show.
Oh, sure.
Comedians interview musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With Music Firsthand.
Yeah.
It's a small town, man.
It is a small town, isn't it?
Yeah.
Creatively speaking.
Yeah. Romantically too.
No kidding. Yeah, I matched on OkCupid with one of our new cast members the other day. It's just like, ha ha.
That's when you know it's weird. I like it because when those things recommend your exes, you're always like, dude,
yeah,
you're stupid.
Come on,
it didn't work the first time.
Right.
Your algorithm is effed up. All right. So as far as like writing the sketches and everything, how are the sketches new every? Is the show new every week, or is there like a? You guys have like Saturday Night Live has a formula of this thing happens and this thing happens and this thing
they
happens.
Get, like, they hit these beats. Characters and stuff. Yeah.
Sure,
there's a lot of like little staple bits in the show. I think in a lot of ways to kind of anchor it for the audience because I mean. It's impossible to describe our show, so I think sometimes things like Patsy or Sam I Am help give them a reference point. And then we have the magic element of Ray Anderson. That kind of, you know, dictates a lot of the transitions, you know, like when we can do certain, you know, how many people are available for a sketch or whatnot. So there's a slight formula to, what kinds of pieces go where. And then we just sort of evolve over time, rewriting and adding new things, refreshing. So, like, every week there's something a little different, even in just the nature of live theater, right? It's a different show every time. But it's definitely more of an evolutionary process than a sudden drastic change to the show.
But also given the fact that people don't come back to Esther's, but every... 6 months to a year.
Yeah,
we're not sort of under the onus of creating a whole new show because the people who came this week weren't there last week.
Right,
so.
Right.
So one or two new things get in every week.
Mm-hmm.
We got a couple of new things going in tonight.
Yeah, but if you come, you know, every 6 months or so, it'll feel like a radically different show. Yeah.
What's your New Year's show? I saw you were selling tickets for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically a best of everything from the year mixed in with usually we write a New Year's Eve specific exclusive sketch that leads us into the countdown.
Uh-huh.
So we have like a live countdown on stage and it's just kind of a big party.
Yeah. I mean, and a banquet and it's,
there's a banquet. Yeah. A lot of it is, you know, like you're you're locking in something to do for New Year's Eve.
Right.
That's the big. That's the big incentive.
No, the show remains largely unchanged, but for the New Year's Eve reference, but we just do it a little later, so we hit that at midnight. You know.
Right. seems like a crazy, like, you guys, you have to give out champagne and there's all kinds
everybody gets pretty fucked up, and because we start the second show later, we have this like 45 minute break in between shows, so traditionally we all get up to our dressing room and kill a couple of bottles of champagne, and then the midnight show's a little loose.
Sounds cool.
It's live theater, you know, anything could happen. And a lot of times some stuff does happen on New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
That's the night that Chelsea got. So one of our actors was playing Marianne Williamson. You remember her from the exciting Democratic primary? This is in like 2020. She was the sort of like loopy, hippy-dippy one.
Oh, yeah.
She rappels from the ceiling into this like Democratic Party, you know, New Year's Eve party. And the problem was she rappelled and then her wig got tangled in the apparatus that she's, you know, her little rappel rig. And so she was suspended, like toes just barely touching the floor, just grazing the floor with this giant wig right at her crotch.
This merkin.
The whole show to a complete standstill. Yeah, I remember that. As Bernie, I was like, I haven't seen a bush like that since the 1970s.
I think I had to like lift her up until she could unhook.
But there was a good 10 seconds at least where we were just like watching her laughing.
Right. Watching her slowly rotate on her rappel rope.
Just letting her live in that moment. Yep. It was pretty good. Yeah. And, you know, stuff like that happens.
I don't think we could technically blame that on the booze, but still.
Well, no, yeah, I wouldn't say that was the booze.
Having to deal with something like that on the booze, though, is pretty, like, right. No, maybe the booze didn't cause it, but, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely. No. But yeah, we're definitely pros at dealing with the unexpected. The great luxury of Esther's, even more so than just having a show that never closes, which is a singularity in theater. I'm not sure there's anybody else who does that, is that we get an opportunity to perform five times a week. So the stuff that we perform over and over, we have honed. I mean, you can, there's a point in the show where Becky Jo shows me her watch, and whenever we do that sketch, it's 9:13. Like, at that point in the sketch, it's always fucking 9:13. Yeah. Like, we hit it to the minute. Yeah. But we get so locked in on these sketches that they become some just really second nature. So if something pops off, you know, we're not, you're not struggling to find what's next.
Yeah.
And we live by the window and die by the window. If you haven't been to Esther's, our upstage wall is a window out into 6th Street. So anything goes out there, you know.
Yeah. A lot of titties, a lot of people dancing along with us.
Not as many titties as I would like. Not as many as I would
there's
like.
There's been titties?
Sure, there's been titties. There's always titties.
Yeah, wow, man.
Well, you get somebody with enough drinks in them in front of a whole crowd of people, you know.
Yeah, Mr. Rockstar, you don't dump get titties them out. So you're,
there's a titties ended a while back. Yeah. Oh, I mean, at least from, COVID, I don't know if it's my that? Age. Like, I aged out of titties being shown. You know what I mean? Or maybe my audience might have aged out of titties being shown.
Yeah, there's not a lot of titties inside the theater. They're almost always outside.
Yeah.
And that, Sixth Street, those goers, you know, we get older, they stay the same age.
Yes.
So to speak.
Isn't that sad and weird? Ted, where do you come from? Like,
I'm originally from Mesquite, Texas, a little suburb right outside of Dallas.
Yeah.
Then I went to college at Southwestern University in Georgetown.
Yeah.
This was when Georgetown was not part of Austin.
Right.
As it is rapidly becoming.
Yeah.
And, I went there to study. I was theater, BFA, and I, you know, was going to become a true actor, a master of thespian. The theater arts. Yes, a thespian. You know, wore a lot of black, a couple of turtlenecks. And it was while I was there, I did, we had like an adjunct professor for my period styles of acting class. It was like Shakespeare and anything before like 1800. And it was Guy Roberts, who at the time was the artistic director for Austin Shakespeare. So when I graduated, I was like, I could move to LA or New York and starve to death and be poor. I can move to Dallas back with my parents and, you know, do what passes for theater in Dallas in the early 2000s. Or stay in Austin, which I already love.
Right, right, right.
And actually get to do some Shakespeare.
Yeah.
So that's what I picked. And about maybe less than, well, about 2 years after that, I was in a production of Richard III, in which I played two different characters, both of whom died. Spectacular murders. And auditioned for Esther's Follies while I was doing that, and literally went from Shakespeare to the Follies.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was it about the Follies? Like, did you want to do something fun and like?
Yeah, I mean, I always enjoyed comedy. I was, a big joker. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, the prospect of being a working actor at 25 and being able to, like, just do that was beyond my comprehension. Plus, I never really wanted to be, like, famous, you know? I don't like the idea of, the whole film industry is a little, I mean, as we've learned from Me Too, it can be a little bit sketchy and weird.
Were you scared about getting
raped?
Sexually molested out there?
I mean, I'm still a little worried about it. I'm always a little apprehensive. I don't go to a second location.
Advantage Johnny.
But I mean, even by association.
No. It's a creepy fucking business, man.
Yeah, very. And so, you know, the prospect of, at the time, you know, I was thinking, oh, I'll just bide my time for a couple of years, build up some experience, maybe do some other stuff. But then I fell in love with the place, and I've been there for going on 15 years now.
Woo!
Yeah. It's amazing. So do you still rehearse, like, weekly?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, every Monday we
have a writer's meeting. Oh, right, that's what you said.
You
had rehearsals on Wednesdays, right?
Yeah, and every Monday we have a writer's meeting. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, we rehearse for like 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon. And then we rehearse just the stuff that's like definitely happening tonight for like an hour before we open house on Thursday and Friday. Yeah.
So what? Tell me about the writer's meeting. How many writers are there, and what is it all the performers? Or are there writers that you don't see?
Everybody's invited. We have a couple. We've been sort of auditioning other writers because we lost this guy, Steve Baranowski, who was our head writer for a while. He was the only guy who would write. So. Yeah, he was a joke machine. He was the only writer who wasn't in the show. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, one upshot of COVID is that we moved the writer's meeting to Zoom, which I very much appreciate, not having to come in just that one extra day, 5 days a week instead of six. But it's predominantly me and Ted right now. Everybody else listens or contributes or adds ideas or things when it comes to, you know, typing and printing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more Ted and I.
Yeah. Well, that's made us refine sort of like how much do we really need to write? You know, how much can be, oh, we can actually still use this. It just needs these little tweaks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, for me, Sean's a little bit more, dignity of hard labor from his Puritan Boston upbringing. He's a little more diligent in his writing. Whereas I'm much more of I had an idea at like 2 a.m. and I can't go to sleep, so I'm going to write this thing. Mm-hmm. And that's usually my
you stuff. Do you wake up and write? What's your
On Mondays and Tuesdays, or like last night I was inspired, or like, well, the pitches will go like Ray yesterday said, oh, we need a song about Big Bird and Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz is bitching about Big Bird getting vaccinated,
right,
and all he did was give me the final joke, which was, you know, Ted Cruz is the only one that flies south in the winter when things get cold. So then I just coughed up a little song last night the first act in the show is a news medley where we do a bunch of sort of like 30 to 45 second songs, which are essentially late night monologue jokes set to music. So you come up with a joke and then, you know, and pick the song.
Engineer.
Right. Yeah. So the Big Bird song is B is for Big Bird. He went and got his shot. T is for Ted Cruz. He bitched and moaned a lot. Both of them are chickens who act like they're 6 years old, but only one of them flies south when it gets cold.
Oh, that's good.
Boom. Yeah. One joke in, out.
Yeah.
That's okay. We'll see. We'll test it out tonight.
Yeah. And the trick is we'd stack up like 10 of those right up at the top of the show. So that you're just cycling.
Yeah, right. If you didn't like that last one, check this one out.
Right, right.
And it sets the pace for the rest of the show too, because everything else in the show is only like 3 or 4 minute long bits too. Mm. And it's funny because you'll do an hour of those, right? Where everybody's laughing. They love every single sketch. And then you start another sketch, and it's still this tension right at the top of it for, like, when's that first laugh going to drop?
Yeah.
So you have to like constantly be we don't have the luxury of like cutting to commercial or turning on an applause sign to say the sketch is over. So we have to have like a nice solid ending to a sketch. And we've done tons of sketches that like, you know, they're great and they're funny, but they don't land on a nice enough punch right at the end to like tell the audience it's over and move on to the next sketch.
If the whole audience isn't laughing at the end of the sketch, it's considered a fail.
Right.
Yeah. It's a terribly rigorous, writing for Esther's is a very, very specific beast. And that's why we're having trouble. I think that's why we have trouble finding writers who aren't in the show, because it takes being in the show to really understand how fast these have to come.
And
our like jokes per second are high.
Yeah.
Like our standards are pretty high for being lowbrow humor. Our standards are very high.
God, and you guys are never like closed for a few weeks.
Unless there's a pandemic.
Yeah.
But there's no break.
There's no season.
No, we usually take off South by, just because Sixth Street gets so crazy.
I've been there during South by for other things take place.
Yeah, and then we'll take off
the keys.
Yeah. And then we'll take off for the motorcycle rot rally just because it's too damn loud down there. That's about it.
Oh God, I bet that's fucking impossible.
Yeah, no, that's why we don't do it anymore. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's impossible. Even just living here on Riverside, like. It's, I mean, you hear it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no, I leave town that week.
Yeah, it's brutal. So what do you do during South by?
Sometimes we get a couple passes for being a venue, and so that's a great time. Like, I've seen a lot, I did a lot of South by film stuff. And then other times it's, you know, your one shot to, like, you know, take a week off and go to Paris or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I like to travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just the visual of you guys having a writers meeting on Monday on Zoom, but you two are the ones that do the most work. But then you live together.
yeah.
Are you on different computers?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, we're in different rooms. But we always sort of convene after and between the two of us. Yeah. It makes it so much easier to write when you have somebody nearby who you can say, "Oh, help me out with this," or you know, "Does this need a punch?" Or to be able to throw one another sketches and here punch this up for
writing
me.
Writing opportunities are really kind of the golden because I'll just be like strolling through to get another cup of coffee, and I'll be like, "Hey, well, help me out with this." And
right.
We'll hammer it. You'll sit there for 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, not
hammer
long.
Hammer out something, and then be like, "Okay, call it done." And those little opportunities have been pretty miraculous.
Yeah, and I think doing all of our film stuff during COVID helped that a lot because we were producing so much, and every stupid little idea that came into our heads, we could film.
Yeah, no, that was a good idea. So the place was able to stay open, and you guys were able to keep your jobs by doing that.
Yeah.
And you were able to generate enough
by the graciousness of you know PP whatever the PPP loans
unemployment and PPP loans.
The city gave us a nice chunk.
We had a Patreon page and people were very generous, but it certainly wasn't enough for 12 people to live on. But we all got a little check every month from the Patreon
stipend.
People, which is nice. Yeah.
That's nice really good. It seems like with just the history of this, I mean, are there any other theaters that are. Like, is Second City still a thing?
Second City's still a thing.
They don't have the same, it's not the same people doing it that were doing it 50 years ago.
Right.
Most of them are dead. But, you know, Esther's Folly is like Second City if Alan Arkin were still working at Second City. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah, also, Second City doesn't do a show. They've become this sort of massive. Right. They have classes and all sorts of showcases and venues for things. You know, there was Beach Blanket Babylon in San Francisco, which just closed, which was our sort of other competitor for like longest running single show in a single spot.
Our sister show in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only like 3 or 4 shows that anybody can even be like, "Oh, this reminds me of that."
Right.
And that was one of them.
Yeah. Just, I was just reminded, Howard Kramer?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Okay,
yeah.
So I became friends with him because he was my comedy defensive driving instructor at Esther's Follies on like a Saturday morning.
Sure.
Back then.
We had a lot of people that did that. Yeah.
He actually got a job out of it. You know Joe Ely?
Uh-huh.
Me and Joe Ely's wife decided to take that class together. Mm. So we went together, and she thought Howard was so funny. She hired him for Joe's like next birthday.
Ah, yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
Yeah, he was on Kramer, and who else was it? Was like, you remember Austin Stories?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Matt Bearden.
Yeah, yeah, Bearden.
I still see him all the time. Yeah, yeah, sure. KLBJ and stuff, yeah.
It was actually a pretty funny show.
Yeah, that was a good show.
And everybody thought they were going to get famous. It was nice for a second.
I remember my wife, my ex-wife, she worked at that 501 complex where they did all of like the post-production, and I think that's where whatever the production company is that did it, like got an office there and all this stuff. And there was so much like, all right, it's all going to happen for Austin. Right. They put, you know, Austin band posters on the thing, and dudes in the bands were like, dude, I'm going to be on MTV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See me on MTV last night.
Right, yeah. I mean, Austin is always, it's perpetually like, in about 5 years, things are really going to blow up in this town for the last like 30 years. It's been, in 5 years, we're going to be LA too.
Right. In theater and acting, is it like it is in music? Like, is it like a place to go kind of like get your shit together and then go off to another place to make it all happen in a big way?
From teaching improv, that was definitely, we had a lot of people that were taking classes, failing, you know, like trying to get their, you know, their 10,000 hours for Malcolm Gladwell or whatever. And then they'd get moved to, you know, Chicago, New York.
Right. LA.
So there's definitely some of that in Austin. And in fact, we get a lot of people that like move out to LA, and then that's when they book something here.
right. Do you guys audition for stuff a lot?
Oh, sure.
Ted does. I don't. I'm not terribly ambitious.
Yeah. I don't consider myself to be that ambitious.
You also have a good agent. My agent kind of folded. Like, I need to find a new one.
Well, now they might listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Your agent's a huge fan of this podcast.
She retired. Yeah.
You should figure that out.
Well, no, but she passed me off to this other person. I had one meeting with her, and I never heard back. So, yeah, I should probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, like, I've definitely decided, like, when I was in college, I wanted to be a real actor, too. And then sort of figured out that I'm not a really good actor, but I'm an okay comedian. Like, acting comedian is a little more technical. It's a little more surface level, and that's the kind of shit I identify with. Like, I'm a very technical person. I'm all about intellectualizing it and sort of finding my way through.
Right,
and
right.
It's difficult. I find it difficult to connect with the, whatever that, you know, the tortured kid inside who helps you cry on camera, but I can rattle off some jokes, no problem. So I think I found my niche there.
Did you ever do stand-up?
I've tried several times, and I did okay, but it's goddamn terrifying.
It's terrifying. Yeah, it's terrible.
Stand up, you gotta want it enough to suck at it for a long time to really get it.
Yeah, get and my 10,000 hours at Esther's definitely not translate to like you're starting fresh with stand up.
That'll give you the, you know, the person that takes 3 years or whatever to get good at stand up. You've got the first year down,
right? Because no, stand up's like golf. It's just you and the ball. You know, everything else is a team sport, but stand-up, it's just all you.
Yeah, yeah. Did you say you guys teach improv?
I did teach for a long time with the Institution Theater, which kind of went under during the pandemic. But I've been thinking about starting up some classes at Esther's again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, does that... I guess that's a great way for those... it seems like most theaters have, like, a classes... aspect to their
thing. Most of the improv school, they make, you know, like the reason they're open is because of the classes. The shows, you know, they charge like five bucks a ticket, so it's a really kind of backwards thing to be thinking like, oh, we've got this show that works and sells tickets, but oh, let's open up a school as well. You know, between that and like waiting out to see when I feel comfortable being locked in a room with 12 people, strangers every week, is, you know, that's another aspect of it. But yeah, I find improv was really, I started doing improv seriously when I started at Esther's, and it was like my little escape, right? Because I wasn't contributing as much in the writing when I was first there, you know, so everything felt very you know, locked in. Like it's almost like auditioning every day your first year at Esther's. And so improv was my place where I could go and just do whatever I wanted, and say whatever I thought was funny right at the moment when I felt like, when it, you know, came to me. And also something that I could do on a Monday or Tuesday that didn't conflict with my schedule and stuff. And it just sort of snowballed from there into, you know, one day Tom Booker asked me to start teaching, and I was like, okay, and did.
Yeah.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Is history.
Yeah.
I just saw a documentary about that. What's that guy's name? The super famous, like the improv.
Del Close. How was that movie?
Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah.
He was fucking crazy, man.
Yeah, dude's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy.
Yeah. But he did innovate, like, most of what people talk about in improv to this day is stuff that you can trace to Del Close.
Yeah. And so much of what we have laughed at for the last, like, 50 years is directly touched by him in some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the comedy of the 80s and 90s is directly from Del Close.
Well, even, like, Tina Fey, I think, was...
She was a Second City. She started in their like touring show, and then like Amy Poehler. Del Close helped them start the Upright Citizens Brigade.
He did.
Yeah, and between that, between Second City. I mean, Second City, Improv Olympic, and UCB. That's like most of comedy from the last 50 years or something.
Did that, what was that improv theater with the question mark?
Fallout. Yeah, the Fallout.
They're still
happening?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just kind of reopened very recently and started doing shows like every night.
Almost. Austin is spoiled for both restaurant choices and comedy shows. If you'll go on like Do 512, I was looking for something to do, and every night there are five or six venues doing stand up, either open mics or some kind of curated show.
Really,
Like we are for a city our size, we have way more comedy, I think, than a lot of other comparable size cities.
Yeah,
a lot of funny people here.
Do you go to shows
as often as I can?
Who do you?
Yeah, I mean, it'll usually be a matter of convenience. What's there? I'll pop by the Velveeta Room often, or I used to go to Cold Town before they tore that shit apart. There was one when I was seriously saying, okay, I'm gonna try stand up. I remember I did three open mics in one night. I did like Cold Town and then one other one and then Spider House Ballroom at like 1 a.m. Nobody in there. Palante was there. She was going up that night too. There's I don't know where I was going with that, but when I would go to shows, it was often to participate.
Right.
Yeah, that was kind of, that was me for most of the time, too, because, our weekends are spoken for. I still try. I went to a Fallout show, like, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, from, like, 2012 to 2015, I had a bunch of friends that were doing it, and it was great, and I was going to shows all the time. Like, I mean, I play every weekend, but, like, those Mondays and Tuesday things, and Charlie Hodge had this thing that was on Mondays.
Charlie Hodge is funny as hell.
So funny. Yeah, and he was one of my best friends. And I don't. He disappeared. Like he went underground.
Yeah.
He stopped being funny. But his shows were great.
Yeah.
I used to go to. Is it Punch?
Matt's show. Yeah, that was great.
That's always a good thing. I don't know if he's bringing that back in or not.
He hasn't yet.
I was gonna go to a show last Monday called Cocktails at the Creek and Cave, where it was the setup was people from the audience would get up and tell like embarrassing sexual stories, and then there was this panel of comedians that would roast them, and I thought it sounded so fun. But
that sounds awesome.
My date canceled, so I didn't go. So we'll do it next time. But
I did at the Fallout. There was a group that was doing this kind of like Ass Cat kind of show.
Oh, probably Fuck This Week.
Yeah. Nope.
No.
At the Fallout.
Yeah.
It was some of the Ariel Leggett. You know her. It was like her and some other people. She was the one that I knew because she's also a musician. She was like, oh, you should come and be like the person that tells the stories, and then we do these improvs based on your stories.
Oh, it might have been Stool Pigeon or something like that. Well, no, that was Cold.
No, something else.
There's so many. There's so many.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was really fun to do.
Narrator one. Yeah, that's, yeah. That's yeah. Cat was the, yeah, the original, but yeah.
Yeah, but it was that.
Actually,
it was that.
No, they were originally called Rolando, Armando. That's technically called an Armando.
Okay.
It was named after a guy, Armando Diaz, who was like in a improv troupe and just refused to actually do scenes. They would start a scene and be like, hey, Mom, how are you today? And Armando would just continue to be Armando and tell some random story.
Yeah.
So they created a new format where it was just Armando tells a story, and then we do improv scenes based off of it.
Rather than the logical choice of firing Armando from the group.
I don't think we were allowed to. It was like a student troupe or something. But yeah, that just goes to show there's never any mistakes. And it's spun off this entire new format
right.
Of a comedy show that everyone has been to at least one of.
Yeah. Oh, I know why I've been. Not that I've not gone. I just don't go to Sixth Street very much. And also, like, I work on weekends a lot. But right. I used to go to Velveeta Room, but Mario's gone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Mario.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
My dude is gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've run through him.
I don't know who to hang out with when I go. Yeah. That's what happens to me is like it's such a great like that sort of thing is so fun to do by yourself like just kind of cruise around and go to different shows come and go as you want. If it's like a shitty night or whatever, you can go to another place, but like you got like a bartender, at least a couple comedians
you got people
friends
there.
You can hang out with
that kind of opportunistic audience finding is really the that's like what you get from a thriving audience, and you need to be able to walk around somewhere too.
Yeah,
you
can't,
if you have to park every time you do that.
Yeah,
so. That's the nice thing about the Velve too. Like being close to Esther's, it's kind of our clubhouse. Like we go there, you always know somebody there. Every bartenders, you're always going to get a free beer. You know, like it's nice.
Those guys all used to go to mugshots.
Oh, yeah. Man, I miss mugshots.
Like, I'd
always
be like, God, why are we going to this place?
Oh, it's the comics bar, man. And we closed that place down so many times. That was the only bar I would go to. Like, I never go to bars and shit on 6th Street, but if we were going to mugshots, I'll go to mugshots. Yeah,
I'll go for one.
Yeah.
I'll go for one.
Two and a half hours later.
So, is there anything, like, is there anything you guys want people to know about Esther's that they don't know? It seems like... I feel like I was going through all this stuff and I was thinking to myself, like, why isn't there like a more like this isn't an historical fucking thing like the armadillo or something? Like, I mean, at this point, it's been around.
Yeah.
And it stayed open and all those mythical places all closed down. This place is still going.
The trick is that we don't take ourselves that seriously. Anytime somebody mentions, you know, one of these, you know, milestones to Shannon specifically, they're like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Like, you know, to them, it's a job. It's just something that they've been doing for so long. I don't think they can see the, you know, the big picture. And, and we're loath to give anything, you know, an extra level of, you know, sanctimony or anything, you know.
Yeah, our self-promotion game is not on par. Esther's has been this little engine that sort of chugs along despite our best efforts of, like, we don't really advertise, so it manages itself. And I think Esther's definitely deserves to be mentioned in the same breath as those legendary places.
Of course it does. Plus, I'm going to say it again. It's still open.
Right. Well, and maybe that's why they're like, oh, it's not going anywhere. Like, once things die, then you revere them, you know.
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with this town? Like, the failing person and the failing, like, they're always the champion of the town. Like,
we're still selling tickets. We're still
never.
The people are always like, oh, I can't believe such and such is gone. It was like, when was the last time you went?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think one important thing to know about Esther's and in relation to, like, talking about improv, so many people walk past Esther's and go, oh, it's improv. It's improv. And I think that means people. They correlate just improv and comedy as kind of being the same thing, you know. But one thing Esther's definitely
improv,
but Esther's definitely is not improv because it's very tightly scripted and tightly rehearsed. And,
yeah,
you know. And I think it's one of the only things left that's the sort of modern vaudeville.
Yeah,
you know, it's probably the closest. It's a variety show. It's the closest thing to it, and there's not a lot of that left around. And it's also people also. Tend to think Esther's is primarily political humor, and maybe that's
cheerful.
A quarter of what we do. Yeah.
That wig was fucking insane, by the way.
That coif.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt
you. They tend to think it's very political, so they might be scared away because they're afraid it doesn't jive with their own ideology. And we're all artists. We're all liberal. We have, the show hues towards liberal more than anything else, but we throw darts at everyone.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Did you write a song about the people waiting for the JFK Jr. to show?
No. I wish I'm sort of waiting to see if that story got more traction.
Aren't they still there or something?
But that's another instance where it's difficult to parody something. It's already fucking parody. Like, if I'd written the joke, I would have written as them as waiting for JFK. They're actually doing it. So where do you can't heighten that? You can't make it more ridiculous. You know?
Yeah.
Is the book like a lot? Is there? It's a coffee table book, but is it still like a lot of words in there?
There's still some words. Yeah, it's actually an amazing. I learn something new every time I pick it up. It's got all sorts of stories in there from ages past.
Yeah. Will you share one with us? Oh, are the people just like something that people don't know about Esther's Follies? Like,
I mean, the one that always comes to mind is the which you lived was the Davy Crockett and the East.
So my favorite one is the and this isn't making it in the book or anything. It's just one of my favorite silly Esther stories. Is we're all outside on the street preparing to do some bit in the window, and for whatever reason, we're in these ridiculous costumes. We have like Santa Claus and Davy Crockett and the Easter Bunny or whatever, and there was this guy. Carl Hickerson,
who
used to sit outside and spin flowers, but he was also this very confrontational cat, and he got into it with some dude on the street, and they were about to have an altercation, and Carl, in all his wisdom, decides the best thing for him to do would be to flee into the theater, and this guy pulls a knife and follows Carl into the backstage. So you got the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and Davy Crockett watching this go down, and we watch this guy run backstage, and all three of us kind of lock eyes. We're like, shit,
don't do it.
So we start hightailing it towards the door. Meanwhile, this guy found himself beyond his ken back there. Didn't know what he was doing. So just as we're about to reach the door, he blasts back out and sees Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and Davy Crockett bearing down on him. Jesus. He flees into the night. But like, I almost feel sorry for this dude. Like, how confused must he have been that this all unfolded the way it was, you know? But that's a great example of like dealing with crazies on the street while still maintaining your... the show must go on.
Yeah. Well, one thing, if you have a knife and you see David Crockett, you know he's got a bigger
knife. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Hopefully he does. It's in his. It's not a rubber knife for his theater thing.
Yeah, I guess.
We've also had some fun altercations with audience members.
There was one night. It was in December, I think, and a woman while I'm playing Donald Trump. In the middle of a sketch, I don't remember what I was probably yelling at Kellyanne Conway or something. Strolls up or stumbles up. What do drunk people do?
Sort of reeled.
Sauntered up. Yeah,
there's a saunter, stumbling staunter.
A staunter, yeah. Up the aisle, yells something along the lines of "Not my president," and then hurls her full margarita at me, wings me in the shoulder. And I just kind of brush it up. Then she goes charging out into the lobby. And at that point, I was like, does she not like Trump?
Right.
Does she not like me making fun of Trump?
Right.
Apparently, she said some pretty racist stuff in the lobby. So that probably confirmed that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a random bit of hostility.
Yeah.
Which, I guess is just like as much as we've tried to maintain, making fun of both sides, we're kind of at a point where you can't, pretend that one side is equal.
Right.
The other. Yeah.
Mostly Republicans listen to this show, so you just lost all.
Yeah. God damn it.
I mean, they still come to the show.
Oh, they come. Yeah. And we have this one song called "I Want to Be Liberal," but it opens with the line of this very sexy girl on the piano saying, "I voted for Trump." And lately, it's been getting more and more of a cheer, which kind of worries me. Like, there's definitely Trumpers in the audience. But then the song turns around and talks about how she fuck all of them and she wants to be liberal. It sort of quiets them down. But, we kind of want to replace that one just because I don't want to be like Well, you're not supporting you.
Get people who are like on their way out, being like, "Don't agree with your politics, but you guys are funny as hell."
That is the general attitude when people come afraid that their ideology is not going to be coddled to, they walk away funny. They're satisfied just because we're funny first and political second.
Yeah, and if you are worked up that like all abortion is child murder, you're probably not going to have the best time. But
probably not going to have the best time anywhere. You're probably just miserable time.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. It's miserable people have miserable times.
Yeah.
That is the truth. So five shows a week. Thursday nights, 8 o'clock.
Thursday 8, Friday 8 and 10, Saturday 8 and 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else coming up that we know about?
I mean, we've got we're about to start rolling out our Christmas stuff, so it's a really good, holidays are always, we're almost always sold out, which gives a nice...
When does that practice. Start, like Black Friday?
You
start
Yeah, pretty much. We start rehearsing.
You guys do a Thanksgiving show? No.
No, we do the day after Thanksgiving. We will be doing the day after... No, we won't be doing the day after Christmas. Christmas is all off this week because it falls on a Saturday. No, we're doing a New Year's Day show this year. That was the exceptional thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
which we never do.
We'll see what state we're
in. No, they come on down. I mean, it's wear your mask, get vaccinated, be safe. But we're taking, you know, we take what safety precautions we can, and you know, get back out with people, see some theater, man.
Yeah, you know,
safety precautions Greg Abbott allows us to take.
Yeah, right.
I met Peter Sagal, and
Peter Sagal of Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah. Yeah, and James Franco.
Oh, sure.
In the bathroom. I went with, you remember Lucas Melendez?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So Lucas used to tour with Marc Maron a lot and open for him a lot. And he got us into this live WTF taping, me and him and Charlie Hodge. And when it ended, we were going somewhere to go eat and stuff. And I was like, well, hang on, I got to go to the bathroom. And everyone was gone, and they were talking to Maron, and I went to the bathroom, and there they were. I was just like, oh, wow, it's amazing. I was so drunk, though.
Yeah.
Did you have, like, an awkward bathroom conversation with them, or you just like, clock them, like, yeah, we're peeing?
I told Peter Sagal that I was just shocked. Like, I couldn't stop staring at him, because I
got
was,
a big dick, huh?
It's like, dude, it's fucking, I did not expect to be. James Franco, I missed the whole dick part. He was just washing his hands. But, like, Peter Sagal, I was like, hey, that was really funny. And he was like, oh, thanks. And I was like, I'm a big fan of yours. And like, I just always imagine you look like someone else. So I'm just sorry, I'm staring
at
you.
It is fun
like,
when you meet a radio personality.
Yeah. Just like
it?
Looking at him like, wow, I never looked up to see what you looked like. Yeah. And you look so much different than I thought you did. Yeah.
Terry Gross looks like as you'd expect her to look. Like she clocks.
Yeah. She does.
Yeah. Everybody else, not so much.
Yeah.
Who's the most interesting person you've ever met in a bathroom, Ted?
Yeah.
In the bathroom at Esther's?
Anywhere.
I met Maria Bamford just outside the bathroom.
Okay, all right, that counts.
But who's the? I don't know. What about you?
When I was at ACL backstage, I met the members of the band Blue October.
In the
shitter. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to meet Janelle Monáe.
Oh shit! That's
not
heavy.
In a bathroom though.
Yeah.
Not in a bathroom. All right. No. I don't think it gets much better than that. And she and I have the same birthday.
Oh, yeah?
December 1st. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Not the same age, though, no?
No. Right. I think she's younger than me.
Those Blue October guys have been on the show.
Yeah, they were a good band. I was so lucky. This was back in the year of Katrina. I was doing a children's show at Zach Scott, and we got invited to the Austin Kitty Limit stage.
Yeah.
So we had to do one little 45-minute set, but then we had backstage, all access. Oh, it was the best, man. It was so cool.
You ever gone without that shit?
No, I'll never go back. No, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
You can't go back to the outside of the outer perimeter. Nope. You can't go into the middle
anymore.
Somebody
who worked at KGSR and went. Got to go backstage for a lot, and that was like super access. And nothing appeals to me anymore.
Even if someone's like, hey, I got a free wristband, you want to come with me? Or like, what are you just walking around in the middle of the fucking thing? Like,
nah, man.
Yeah, no, there's air conditioned places back there. You can watch your shit on a white screen.
Air conditioned, there's
and
like
a free bar.
Booze, free food.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So until you can offer me that, like golf carts from show to show.
It's like
doing heroin and then somebody coming up and being like, hey, you want a shot of well tequila?
Yeah. No. I thought you were going to say a CBD gummy.
or a CBD gummy. Some CBD lip balm.
Guys, it's been great talking to you, and you've inspired me to go to a show.
Please do.
And check it out. People can go to estersfollies.com, get tickets there.
You can actually pick out your seats now.
You still do Honey Boo Boo?
I did not currently do.
Because that was in the bio thing, and I was like, wow, it seems like some people would be like,
yeah,
I remember that name. A weird baby from a reality show or something?
I used to joke that I've played, you know, the Pope, Dick Cheney, Honey Boo Boo, Trump, you know, villains.
Putin.
Yeah, Putin. I did Putin. Yeah.
Putin.
Yeah. Was it that one time you were dressed in the wrong costume? Was that, were you dressed as Honey Boo Boo, or you're supposed to come on?
Yeah, no, I was dressed as Honey Boo Boo, but I was supposed to come on as a Secret Service
agent. No, I remember I was on stage and Ted is like 8 seconds away from his cue, and I can see backstage Honey Boo Boo coming down the stairs. I'm just like, that ain't it. And I see all of the Ted just realize it, shoot back upstage like a rocket, change faster than any human has ever changed before, and breathlessly makes it on stage for his cue.
Fortunately,
like,
we were supposed to be hungover in that scene. So
right. Oh, that's what the sketch was. That's right. That's right. That's right.
I had a question for you, Sean. With the music stuff, is it live? Like, how do you perform it on stage? Like,
we're sort of equally split between track. We have a piano player, but a lot of our the musical numbers are tracked. So we're about half and half of live piano to track numbers.
Okay. And the guy who plays the piano
creates the tracks.
Creates all the tracks.
He's your music guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, guys, it's been great talking to you.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming. It's been nice, a little outside.
Beautiful.
Hey, guys, let's have class outside today.
Yeah, totes.
All right, everyone go to estersfollies.com. Get involved. Thanks, Ted and Sean.
Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming.
That's Ted Meredith and Sean Branigan from Austin's modern-day vaudeville theater since 1978, Esther's Follies. You can find them at estersfollies.com. Shows every Thursday at 8 p.m. and every Friday and Saturday at 8 and 10 p.m. It's located at 525 East 6th Street in the heart of Dirty Six. I want to thank Sean and Ted for joining me by the pool a couple months ago, shooting the shit, talking about Esther's Follies, learning about Esther's Follies. Check out that book that my friend Jesse Sublett wrote. And don't forget, gang, when you're out there checking out estersfollies.com, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere. New shows all the time. All right. I want to thank Sean and Ted for coming by. I want you to have a very Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to all of you guys. Merry, Merry Christmas. I hope you are exactly where you want to be. And if you're not, reach out to someone. Someone out there wants to hear what you have to say. Let them know you need someone. All right. Merry Christmas. I love you guys. Let's get down.